This is the BC Resource Group's Path to Partner podcast, where we get exclusive insights from the leading figures in legal. And now, here's your host, Colin Moses.
All right. Hello and welcome to BC Resource Group's Path to Partner podcast, where we interview some of the leading lights in legal to find out how they climb the corporate ladder and what tidbits of advice they have for our candidates that they may be able to take away with them. So today we're fortunate enough to have Alison Avila, who is an assistant managing partner at Gordon Rees. Alison, thank you for joining us on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Definitely. Now, can you tell us a little bit about your firm and the areas that you specialize in?
Yeah, so Gordon and Rees is a national law firm that started out in the early 70s in California and then has expanded substantially over the past few years. We practice in a variety of different legal areas, a lot of healthcare, employment law, transactional, litigation, trademark, branding. I focus mostly on defense, litigation defense work, and also healthcare and employment.
Okay. So how did you come to choose that specialty or those specialties?
It was really when I first got out of law school. My first job was with the Corporation Counsel in New York City in litigation. And then from there, since that's where I started, that's just how it continued to go. I started to branch out into healthcare and representing physicians and medical spas and different aesthetic practices over the past few years because it's a growing business. And there was really just not many people who knew anything about the regulations in that particular area. So I just expanded my practice to include that.
Okay, cool. And so is there one area that I guess you prefer over everything else?
Actually, I like the aesthetic law practice that I'm doing right now. It's really helping a lot of people try to navigate through these murky waters because the regulations are just not very clear. And the people really do appreciate the work that you do for them. I do a lot of lecturing and attend conferences and you know, try to help people understand, you know, some of the restrictions that they have that they would not know if they weren't getting the information from me or other attorneys that are practicing in this area. And, you know, I just think that, you know, litigation is very draining. I don't want to say that it's a lot of work, but it's a very high stress level and it just kind of takes a toll. So this is more transactional based.
Right. Okay. So what made you want to become a lawyer in the first place?
I don't really think that there's anything I can pinpoint specific that made me want to become a lawyer. But there was certain things that I did want in my career, and that was having autonomy, having the ability to have that foundation and that strong basis of education so that it would be a career that would last for a long time. And right. And I had worked when I was a kid for a lot of you know, different attorneys as a legal assistant. So it was sort of like a natural calling, I guess, to go this route.
Yeah. And I guess once you're in there, it's like, that's kind of what you know, and you're familiar with it. So you just wanted to continue in that environment.
Mm-hmm. That was really what happened. I did try to do social work for a little bit of time. I went to school and got my master's degree in psychology, and I worked in that field for a little bit. And I really just didn't like it. And I realized at that point that the legal area was really better suited for me.
Yeah, psychology. I mean, I've heard some stories about psychology. In fact, my brother did the same thing, and he ended up working in like a mental home. And the things that he saw, he was just like, "Yeah, I can't do this anymore. I'm going back to school to do something else," because that can be really, really draining. All right. So when you went to college, you didn't know that you wanted to be a lawyer. You went in, decided that you wanted to be in psychology, and then changed your mind and went to law school, and then everything just took off from there.
Yes. During the time that I was in undergrad, I was actually working as a legal assistant. And so I wanted to try like the psychology area. So I just continued to work legal while I put myself through school. Once I graduated, then I ended up getting going for my master's degree. And when I was going for my master's is when I started to work in the psychology of social work. And, you know, when I realized that wasn't for me, I then went back to school, to law school, and I went to law school at night while I worked during the day.
Cool. So how do you handle, because I know a lot of our candidates have an issue that with the work-life balance, because the hours can be, you know, can be crazy. So how have you handled that since you've been practicing?
Well, it's definitely not easy to balance it. I think that for the most part, I had a very strong family foundation, which was good. So that when I was working during the day and then I'd go to school at night, and I had two kids at the time. So, you know, I had family around to support and to help with, you know, watching the kids. You know, my husband as well also helped out a lot. Just on the weekends, you know, you really have to make sure that you set aside the time to be with your family. I mean, even if you have, you know, schoolwork or other type of work that had to get done, you had to spend, you know, at least a few hours just putting that all aside. And, you know, ultimately it was something to be working for. And so I, for the time I was at school, like I knew that that wasn't going to be a forever thing.
Right.
And then once I graduated, I mean, I just have always made it a point to at least try to, you know, spend time in the evenings or on the weekends to, you know, with kids and family, because it really it's the most important thing. And I kind of been fortunate that I didn't ever have a job where it required me to work till 10 or 11 o'clock at night every day.
Right.
Unless I was on trial and, you know, and then that's like short span of time where you know, you're going to be working for longer hours, but you have to, you just can't put all of that focus on your job.
Yeah, because we get a lot of requests for in-house counsel positions. So we have a lot of the candidates would say, you know, they've been in big law for a while, and they're tired of their hours. They want something that's a little less stress, and they request to find an in-house position. Did that ever cross your mind, or were you always pretty much knew where you wanted to be and what you wanted to do?
It always crossed my mind to do that, and you know, seems like there would be a lot of benefit to doing that. And maybe you think that you're going to be just working 9 to 5 if you do, you know, in-house. But I think the thing is that you create a lot of stress in your life when you think that you have to work the amount of hours that you think that you have to do it. So I have always tried to like a good job during the day, and so that I don't have and be productive, so that, you know, I don't have to be there until 10 or 11 o'clock at night. I mean, I think that you could always work more hours, but you really have to make that decision to work a little bit less, if that makes any sense.
Right.
But I think that even if you do something like with in-house, there's no security really with that either. And you don't know whether or not you're going to really have to work more hours or, you know, less hours. And, you know, what if the company doesn't do well, you know, are you stuck then that you've only been working for this one particular company and now you're out of a job? So I always kind of went back and forth on
it. Yeah, and particularly with startups, we found that, you know, it can be just as many hours as working big law sometimes. So, you know, sometimes you look to make that transition so that you have less hours or a better work-life balance, and it doesn't always pan out the way you'd expect.
Right.
So have you had any challenges as a female in the legal field, like rising to where you are right now?
Definitely. I think that especially in litigation is very tough because you're usually up against men. There's not that many female trial attorneys. I think that there's clients still who think that a man is better suited at defending a claim or litigating a case or, you know, going to court. And it's harder, I think, for women to actually get business and clients where people are respecting you as a woman, and certain areas you kind of stay away from. I mean, one of the things that I got into the aesthetics is as a female, people can associate me more with an aesthetic practice than say if I was representing a construction company or, you know, labor law claims and things like that. So it is tough. I mean, I think that you can get very limited.
Yeah, definitely. And it's kind of, I guess it's almost like you have to, you're going in there starting out with like a level of respect below what many of the, of your male counterparts would have to go through, because they see you and they're just like, oh, I've got a woman defending me, or, you know, so I guess that's something else that you'd have to overcome.
Yes. Yes, you definitely do. And, you know, you have to be careful a lot of times, too, because if you come across too strong, then people have a, you know, a negative impression about you. And, you know, if you're too weak, then, you know, that's not good either. So it's definitely harder for females in this industry to get ahead.
So how do you balance that line of not being too strong or too weak? Like, is there anything that you do specifically that you could point to that helps you navigate that line?
Well, I think in just being prepared and doing a good job and showing that you can win and you can win over a man in terms of, you know, trying a case against them. And that really has to do with just learning the law and being prepared to defend a case. And I really just try to be myself. I'm not a particularly very weak person to begin with.
Right.
And so I don't have to come across as too overbearing because I just am confident, I guess is the word.
Yeah.
In my skill set. So I don't try not to let the whole female part of it overtake what my plans or my goals. And it's actually been fairly successful in being that type of person. And just, I'm not going to really tolerate being talked down to, I guess, as a woman. So.
Right. Awesome. So how would you describe your leadership style today?
I really try to just lead by example in terms of my work ethic.
Right.
And when I have associates who are working for me, I really try not to like do too much hand holding and let people be more independent and come to me if they need assistance with something, because I think you have to let people grow and learn, you know, along the way. So I try to be fair with people who are working, but I also expect that they can work independently and will come and ask a question when they have one, you know, and not try to hide things. I really try to give everybody the benefit of the doubt and hope that they flourish.
Okay, cool. How many associates do you have in your team?
There are 7.
Okay, very cool. And yeah, have they given you any feedback about your leadership style or how you mentor them or anything along those lines?
I have a really good relationship with everyone, and I don't act like their boss, so to speak. You know, we do try to like go out and, you know, go to dinners and or have drinks or something so that we have a more like a family type of a situation. And so,
right.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I've had feedback that, you know, people appreciate that, like the willingness to have the door open and listen and just talk, get advice without having a fear that somebody, you know, looks stupid or they're asking a stupid question. And so it's more of a familial type of atmosphere, which I think works a lot better.
Right. And I guess especially when you're spending so much time with people as well, you don't want it to be a burden. You want it to, you know, you want them to enjoy spending time with you as much as they can, because, you know, they're spending a lot of time and you don't want to go home and you just hate life, you know.
Right.
You want to be able to, you want to enjoy the experience of work as much as possible. So yeah, that's awesome that you do that.
No, I mean, because I like to try to make it fun to the extent that you can make work fun.
Yeah. Most definitely. So are there any lessons from your early management experiences that you've taken with you along the way?
Well, I think really not being too quick to judge, I think, is like a lesson that I have learned. I mean, we've not so much in terms of managing attorneys, but more so managing other staff, because I think that that's also a skill that you have to develop. Just because you're a lawyer doesn't mean that you know how to manage people. And so I had a few experiences earlier where, you know, hiring like administrative staff was difficult because you had a different impression of what I wanted to what I was being given. And so it was just being more, I think, a little bit more careful in the hiring process. And in terms of, you know, managing other attorneys, I think I've just gotten a little bit, I don't want to say softer, but a little bit more laid back and not being as demanding, I guess, in terms of work and work product. So
Now, is that due to development on your part, or is that due to just hiring better attorneys?
I think it's hiring better attorneys.
Okay. Cool. Well, that is, you know, that's what we found is that's, you know, one of the number one problems people are having now is, you know, retention. Attorneys go in and, you know, it's not what they expected. The culture's different. The culture's different to what they expected. They don't like this person. So, yeah, that's why we have like our retention regime where we check in with our lawyers for the year just to make sure everything's going well on both sides.
It's really very important because a lot of people who first start out are people who may not have had any work experience before mm-hmm. actually becoming a lawyer. Because, you know, you got to remember a lot of, you know, people are coming right out of school in what, like mid-20s. And so it's very tough, I think, for the younger generation to come out and hit the ground running and start working. And, you know, you have a lot more responsibility than you've really ever had in the past and learning how to, you know, to navigate all of these things. And so you really have to look at somebody as a total package and not, to me anyhow, just where they went to law school and, you know, how and what grades they had when they were in high school. I mean, it's really about a whole life and what did you do before and while you were in school? Mm-hmm. You know, did you have another job? Did you, you know, do volunteer work? Did you do anything other than just reading a book, you know?
Right. So are most of your hires straight out of law school?
Usually one, at least a year out.
Okay.
Usually. I mean, we did just hire someone who is straight out of law school. And in fact, he just ended up getting admitted a couple of months ago. So right now we have him doing motions and you know, some other things. But typically, no, it's usually at least one to 3 years out.
Okay, so what made you do it in this particular instance?
He actually knew someone, so it was like a friend of a friend, and right. So you know that was pretty much that situation.
So it was a who you know type of thing.
Yes.
Cool. Well, that's often how it is in many aspects of life.
Mm-hmm.
So the more people you can have in your social network, is the better off you be in a lot of cases.
I think that's critical.
Yeah.
I think in, you know, in law and then, like you said, in other aspects of life, I mean, you really need to get a good social circle. And that's, you know, that's a lot of where people get clients from.
Yeah.
You know, somebody that they went to law school with or somebody's father or mother, you know, like it's really so prevalent. And it's unfortunate to some degree because for those people who just were not brought up in that type of a circle,
right.
You know, it can be a hindrance, but I guess it's, you know, you really just need to start making connections along the way. And I guess that's why it's always good to be nice to people.
Yeah.
have a lot of friends.
Most definitely. So other than being nice to people, would you have any advice for someone that, you know, maybe isn't so outgoing and doesn't have that network of how they could go about building a bigger social network, meeting new people and having a better chance of knowing the right person to get into a firm like yours?
I think joining some clubs or associations is a very mm-hmm. good thing. You meet a lot of people that way. You know, I know there's the bar associations, but even aside from that, they do have other groups that are more specialized. So that I think is something really very good to do. I mean, I joined the bar association early on, and then there's women's bar association, and then they have them specialized for Catholic lawyers and Colombian lawyers. So you know, whatever particular group somebody thinks that they associate with more is something good to do.
Okay, would you advise just joining multiple of those groups, even if you're not, say, a Catholic lawyer or a Colombian lawyer? Like, would you suggest just joining just so you meet more people? Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Awesome.
And sometimes they do have events, and so it's not just that you're just going to a meeting. I mean, you know, they have dinners and conferences and things like that. So that's, I think, is definitely a good way to meet people. And, you know, some people I know joined, their boards, their school boards or things that don't necessarily have to be associated with being a lawyer, but you can just join in other community activities so that you meet other people that you may have something in common with.
Right. Awesome. All right. So, Alison, what do you think helped you most on your path to partner? And is there anything that you would have done differently or you think might have advanced your career quicker?
I think that if I would have focused a little bit more on what I wanted to do earlier on, I think that would have been better because I did, you know, I did go to school late in the game. So I think that that would have been definitely a big help because then you're starting off a lot earlier in life. And I think in terms of career development, when I was in law school, one of the teachers there, or professors, I should say, kept a focus on saying that you really need to, as a lawyer, do trials because it's a skill set that you'll always take with you and that not that many other people have. And I think that was just something that was really a key because once I got the job and with the city and then started working and doing trials, I mean, it did get me some notoriety because I was fairly successful. So that helped me to advance more because there wasn't that many women doing it. And that kind of just put me on a different pathway. And then also just in you know, working, I mean, being diligent, I really have never had a situation where I've like had to work, you know, 7 days a week and do all crazy things. I always went to work, you know, I took my vacations when I had them, but I mean, I was, what's the word I'm looking for? Reliable.
Right.
And so if, you know, something had to get done at the last minute, you know, you could count on me to jump in and assist and get that done. And I think that that's what people really look for as well. They want a team player. It's not all about just competition. It's about being able to, you know, roll up your sleeves and jump in when you have to. And I think we'll always get somebody a step ahead.
Mm-hmm. Now, having said that, is there still an element of competition in your team, or is it nothing like that? It's all about just helping each other out, and you know.
I think there's always going to be an element of competition, unfortunately, because it's the only way that you kind of have to differentiate yourself to some degree, So I think with the associates, you know, you're competing to become a partner. You're competing to, you know, make maybe more money than somebody else. And I don't think you'll ever get around it. I mean, so to the extent that everybody chips in, I think it would be unnatural if there wasn't some element of competition to motivate people.
Right. You just got, I guess it's one of your jobs is just to make sure it doesn't get out of hand and, you know, it's, you know, one person's not advancing to the detriment of the team or the detriment of someone else.
Right.
Cool.
Right.
So.
Yeah. And that's not always an easy thing, but try to say that everybody's really judged individually. And so one thing that we will not tolerate is any type of like fighting or backstabbing or anything else. I mean, because you can't work that way.
Right. And that just hurts the whole team. Now, the way you've described your team, is that, would you say that's just how your team works, or would you say that's like a firm-wide culture?
It really is a firm-wide culture. This firm has been very different than the last firm that I was with, and it more so because people share in credits. And so, you know, a lot of things where, you know, even with at the partner level, you know, there's competition because you're compensated based on your client base. And so if you need somebody's help with something, you know, people either wouldn't, like at the last firm, they wouldn't share in the credits or, you know, anything else. And so here it's more of a philosophy that everybody, you know, helps each other. And if I need somebody in California to help me with a case, I don't mind giving them credit, monetary credit on the case, because they're actually helping. They do the same. It's reciprocal. So it just makes it for more of an all-around atmosphere where you really don't have to worry. People aren't trying to steal your work. So they're not trying to steal your clients.
Okay. So what are the traits that you look for when you're hiring, like personality traits and things of that sort?
Being able to communicate well, not being timid.
Right.
Willingness to be a team player.
Okay. And how does a candidate get that across in an interview?
Well, sometimes it's based on the things that they say. So, for instance, we had a woman come in for an interview, and we asked her why she was wanting to leave her job, you know, her current position. And her response was that there was a lot of times that she would do work on a file, but and say make file like motion and writing and things like that. But yet she was never getting any type of credit for it or accolades. Mm-hmm. And so, and then a few times, you know, somebody asked her to, you know, handle a case that wasn't her own and she didn't really appreciate it. And so that type of a response is somebody to me that does not want to help out.
Right.
You know, that's somebody that's looking just to kind of make a name for themselves.
Yeah.
And so I can't really say what's the magic word, but you can kind of tell sometimes too from somebody's like history. I mean, sometimes you have people who have jumped from job to job in, you know, a year or 2 years, even though they may not even be out of school for that long. So that's not ever really a good sign.
Right. And that's very difficult in this market as well.
Mm-hmm.
It's difficult to get one job, let alone, you know, a few in a couple of years.
Yeah. And so it just doesn't seem that, you know, especially when you're first starting out, you know, you need to really learn and you need to learn from good people and learn good habits. So I can understand sometimes when people leave a job because they're working at a place that doesn't really promote mm-hmm. good ethics. But aside from that, it's usually kind of a questionable candidate if they've haven't been able to hold down a position for too long.
Right.
I think honesty and candor during an interview is also a good sign for me. I like people who are real, that can have just a normal conversation. I mean, you know that it's an interview and so you're going to be nervous, but you know, there are people who come across as just being very genuine, and I think that's, you know, that's important. Don't try to be somebody that you're not.
Right. How many interviews does it normally take from start to finish?
Usually two.
Okay.
And sometimes we have people meet the entire team so that we know whether or not they're going to get along with everybody.
Right. And now, would they interview with just you, or would they interview with someone else before they meet the team? Or like, how does the process work?
Yeah. So usually they meet with me and the managing partner. Mm-hmm. And then if we think that they're suitable, we will maybe have them come back and meet the team. Sometimes they'll meet with me first if the managing partner is not available. And so they'll have to come back and do that. They always meet with me and him, though. And then, like I said, sometimes it just depends on whether or not we'll have them meet with the other team.
Okay. All right. So what is your industry outlook for the next couple of years as far as both just legal in general and your specialization?
I think the field will continue to flourish. I think there was a time period where the market was really down. It was saturated with lawyers. I think that has come around, though. And, you know, I think it should be pretty solid for the future. Mm-hmm. And in terms of my particular area, I think that will also grow because the aesthetic industry is tremendous now and billions of dollars are being spent in, you know, different procedures. And so that I think will also, you know, continue to grow and then, you know, expand into other areas, stem cells and some other innovative procedures and, you know, medical devices that are coming out that, you know, you always need an attorney to direct and guide you on compliance and regulation. So I'm confident that will, you know, will also flourish.
Okay, cool. All right. So we're getting towards the end now. So what career and life advice do you give to new college grads as well as those that are looking to transfer laterally?
I would say that for a lateral, they should really take time to know and understand the firm's culture of where they're looking to go, because just jumping, you know, laterally won't really get you where you want to be at the end of the day unless you actually put, you know, what you want to do and where you want to go. And, you know, making connections, like I said, along the way. I mean, I think everybody, in order to be successful, it has to develop business. And that is one of the toughest things for anyone coming out of law school or, you know, graduating from, you know, from you know, college or making a, you know, a decision to go into law school. I mean, it's has to be at the forefront of your mind, because you're only going to be a cog in a wheel for a period of time. You have to have something to offer. And that is something that I wish that I would have developed earlier on as well, because you first are trying to learn how to be a lawyer and you're not understanding what the business aspect of it is. And they should have more courses about business in law school, and people have to really be aware that that's your goal, develop those connections and get those the business connections.
Right. So I know you said that one of your bits of advice for developing businesses to just expand your social circle and, you know, get to know as many people as possible. Is there anything else that you particularly have done or that you do in order to develop business?
I write articles in several magazines that are published nationally. And so that helps to identify myself as having a specialty in this particular area.
Okay.
I also go to conferences and lecture, and that has helped as well. And when I first started doing this particular area, what I did was I just went around to some local like medical spas and spoke to people just to find out, like, how did they get into the business? What did they need when they, you know, got into the business? Was there any consultants or people that they met with along the way? Then I got some information and then actually contacted some of these consultants who have connections with other people who own, you know, spas or doctors. And so I just kept my focus on gaining those connections. And then once I went to the conferences, you know, the first one or two conferences I had to actually pay for. And then when I spoke to people while I was there and you know, I went to speak to the conference managers, then they put me on their circuit so that I don't pay for, you know, to have to go to these conferences. You know, I've actually been paid to speak at them. And it's just a matter of just doing some intel and going out and speaking to people, finding out what the people really wanted or needed, and then developing a practice from it so that it just continues to expand. So just even though there's some regulatory information that you say maybe a doctor needs, then what else does that person need in their practice? And so we have an employment sector here, so that it's natural then to say, okay, well, let me do your employment work for you. And, you know, you need a trademark. Let's do the trademark work for you, corporate. So it really just started from me going into a few local places and then calling and making contacts, and then you know, just continues to escalate from there.
Okay, great. All right, and I wanted to ask you, when you're interviewing, your best interview questions that tell you the most about the candidates that are in front of you.
One of the bigger or the best questions, I think, is why are you looking to leave where you are now?
Right.
Because you really want to be able to gauge where that, what is making that person unhappy in their current place, and whether or not that's, they're going to face the same circumstances and with us, you know. So if it's somebody like, doesn't like their, you know, their work hours or their, you know, other team players, or they don't like the type of law that they're practicing, well, are they going to get something different here, you know?
Right.
And another question is, what business opportunities do they think, or what areas would they like to get into? And, you know, what is their plan really to do that? So sometimes people will come in and say, like, yeah, I don't really like to do, I mean, I like to do personal injury, but if I could do something else, you know, I would be doing X. And then the question is, well, what steps are you doing in order to get to that place? You know, to me, that just shows what,
shows an initiative.
Right. Yeah. What, how can they develop this plan? And we really try to just promote, if there is an area that you think that you would be suited for to practice, we'll do whatever we can to help. And that means, you know, if there's a conference that you want to go to that you think that, you know, you would be worth it for you to go to meet people, then we don't have any problem in paying for that and marketing.
Okay, awesome. All right, Alison, that is everything that I had to ask you. Is there anything else you'd like to say before we wrap this up?
No, I appreciate the opportunity to have the conversation with you. And, you know, I'm always willing to give people, you know, my thoughts or advice if you have anybody that has a question.
Definitely. And so, yeah, thank you so much for this. And I know you've said that you do speak at conferences. If someone wants to see you, which conferences are you speaking at? Anything in the near future?
Yes. In June, I am going to the Vegas Cosmetic Surgery Show, which is it's a global aesthetic conference where they have physicians coming from all over the country, all, you know, different types of physicians. And in November, I'm speaking at the International Aesthetic Show, and that's in Miami, October 31st to November 3rd.
Okay, so you got some traveling coming up.
Yes.
Nice. Very nice. All right, Alison, thank you so much for your time today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And it was very insightful.
Okay.
Definitely.
Bye now.
Thanks for listening to the Path to Partner podcast. For more exclusive content, log on to bcresourcegroup.com or subscribe to the show on iTunes.